to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @RedRock_BBall, Facebook.com/RedRockBasketball. The email address is RedRockFantasyBasketball@gmail.com. And also make sure you check out the YouTube channel, which you can find linked in the show notes for this podcast on the website RedRockBasketball.com, or just searching YouTube for Red Rock Fantasy Basketball. And that brings me to an important point. A video has gone up on the YouTube channel today talking about the Red Rock Dynasty League. If you're interested in applying to join the Red Rock Dynasty League, which will have myself in it, it will have Mark Roberts from RotoWire, it'll have Matt Smith from the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast as well, along with listeners and viewers and readers and all you sort of guys. If you are interested in joining the league, head across to YouTube. You'll see the links throughout my social media and on the YouTube channel, obviously. Watch the video. It's only 2 minutes long. Follow the instructions there, and there will be more details coming out about the league, but the league will be obviously a deep dynasty league. It will involve salaries. It will involve contracts for players. It'll be a head-to-head league. More of the details are being sorted out at the moment, but if you're interested in applying, head across, check out that video, and see the application process. Now, we're back with another of the Season in Review podcasts. Today, we're talking about the Miami Heat. The heat is on. Yes, the Miami Heat, a team who unceremoniously fell from being in the NBA Finals to out of the playoffs. We know the reason, one of the reasons for that is the absence of LeBron James. They also suffered a big blow with injuries, with Chris Bosh going down with that blood clot in his lungs. Injuries to Josh McRoberts, one of their bigger free agent signings in the offseason. Interesting things ahead for the Miami Heat. If you look at their roster, not a lot of flexibility in it. There's only one player who's out of contract to finish the season on their roster. That's Michael Beasley. There's three guys with player options. Dwayne Wade, and we've heard some talks about his contract negotiation stalling in terms of the Heat and him being a fair distance apart in the contract. He's got a $16 million player option for next season. Luol Deng's got a $10 million player option for next season. And Goran Dragic has got a $7.5 million player option. Now, I imagine that Dragic declines that option and he's looking to sign a full max contract with the Heat. There doesn't seem to be any doubt he will re-sign with the Heat, but there's no flexibility in this team at this stage. Now, the season after, there might be a bit more flexibility, but there's nothing much coming up for next season, so we're not going to see them be big players in the free agent market. They could always swing some trades, which we know Pat Riley is always keen to do, but in terms of just overall roster flexibility, there's not a lot there. They do have the 10th pick in the upcoming draft, so that's important for them. They haven't had a lottery pick for a while. Obviously, they need to make sure they can get someone who can be a contributor, whether that's off the bench, because their starting lineup, if it's all fit and healthy, is really solid. They need to draft a younger guy who's going to be able to contribute off the bench. And there's going to be some interesting things happen with this team next season, especially from a fantasy point of view. Let's start looking now at their point guard situation. And Goran Dragic was the guy who came across at the trade deadline. A little bit of a surprising move when he forced himself out of Phoenix. Well, not necessarily a surprising move because it was building to that during the season. But at the start of the season, there was no real indication that would be the case. Wasn't quite as good. I think that's fair to say. But just this season than what he was in the season before when he was an All-NBA guy. Didn't live up to that hype. And it wasn't just the fact that he was in Phoenix with the two other point guards. When he came to Miami, he wasn't as good either. We see his per-game ranking for the season is 60th. Post-All-Star break, 51st, and that's all with Miami. So he wasn't able to get back to that level that he showed in 2013-14 when he was with Miami. And that was a Miami team who was playing without Chris Bosh. It was really only Dragic and Wade to be classed as stars on that team, and he couldn't really get it going. That's not to say that 2013-14 was a fluke. It was definitely an up-and-down season for him last year. Changing scenery never helps, but having half a season in Miami, if he's back next season, I imagine that he'll have a much bigger impact than what he did, and I think taking him inside the top 50 is definitely it's a pretty decent move. His numbers for the season, we see what they were compared to last season. 16 points down from 20. Big difference. His three-pointers dropped. His assists went down from 5.9 to 4.5. His steals from 1.5 to 1. He still shoots a fantastic percentage as a point guard. 51% last year, 50% this year, a nice 77% free throw percentage. So the real thing is that he dropped his assists, he dropped his points, he dropped his steals, he dropped his three-pointers. That's significant. That dropped him down, 30, 40 spots in the rankings. If he can get those sort of numbers back up, the assist, I imagine, will go back up. The points, maybe not so much. When you're playing with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, they're going to get a lot of the scoring opportunities as well. So I don't think he becomes that top 20 sort of guy he was last season. I don't think he's a guy who finishes the season ranked 60th either. I think probably around the 40s, 35 to 45 is a good range for him next year. People may be a little bit discouraged. Well, they should be discouraged with what he did this season, because I said it wasn't just the fact that he was in Phoenix with all those other point guards. In Miami, he disappointed too. But you might be able to get him at a marginal bargain, maybe a round later than what he should go. I think that's probably what I'd be expecting from Goran Dragic next season. He will be better than he was this season. I have very little doubt of that. Just don't think we'll see 2013-14 Goran Dragic back, unfortunately for Goran Dragic. The other point guards on the roster were pretty big disappointments. Mario Chalmers, who was a guy I held pretty big hopes for in the offseason. I thought that without LeBron there, he'd be able to step up his scoring. He'd be able to step up his assist numbers. And inexplicably, he seemed to be sharing minutes with Norris Cole at the start of the season, playing off the bench behind Cole. And if you listen to me at all during the season, you know that Norris Cole is not a favorite of mine. I don't think he's a good player at all. It never made sense to me why they'd be playing Cole over Chalmers. I think Chalmers offers a lot more to this team. And his season overall, it was, in a sense, marginally better than last year in some areas, but overall, a disappointment. He did end up as the 82nd ranked player in head-to-head leagues. That's because he played 80 games. If we strike it down to a per-game basis, 118th, which is still usable for 12-team leagues. He still had a position there. 10-team leagues, maybe not so much. But he really fell off, obviously, at the end of the season with Goran Dragic arriving, finishing the season 195th in the last month. So early on, if we see his total rank of 82 and that last month of 195, it means he was a lot better early on. But his overall season numbers, 10.2 points, 1-3, 3.8 assists, 1.5 steals. The thing where he really took a beating is he dropped his field goal percentage from 45 down to 40. His three-pointers, which I expected maybe to go up a bit, went from 1.2 down to 0.9, and his steal numbers stayed steady, but his assists went from 4.9 down to 3.8. I was expecting a 5.2, 5.3 sort of assist numbers for him. I was expecting 1.5 threes, maybe 12 points, and that would have been a great season. For now, assuming Dragic re-signs, which we don't think there's going to be much doubt about that, Chalmers is a bench option, obviously, a 20-minute-a-game sort of player. And that relinquishes him down to 16-team leagues, dynasty leagues. There's not much hope for him, I don't think, of becoming a starter-level player, being a top 120 player again in his career. So no point really acquiring him and thinking, oh, maybe he gets traded and becomes a starter. I don't think there's much hope in that sort of happening. We just have to expect him to be a really decent-level backup guy who can still contribute three-pointers, contribute some steals, and occasionally give you a 3 or 4 assists. That'd be probably where his value lies. He's an unrestricted free agent after next season, so the likelihood of him staying in Miami appears low after they drafted Shabazz Napier in the first round last season. Now, Napier definitely wasn't someone who impressed me all that much. He had some stretches when there was no Dwayne Wade, when Chalmers was out, before Dragic arrived, when he got decent minutes. But overall, 5 points, 0.8 threes, 2.5 assists, 0.8 steals, the standard rookie 38% shooting, which we've come to expect now from rookies, especially guards. And not great numbers. Even when we look at his per 36 splits, 9.3 points, 1.5 threes, 4.6 assists, 1.4 steals, not all that exciting numbers. He ranked at 241st per game, so probably a bit better than you would have thought. And I think that we get to 2 to 3 years' time, he's going to be a guy who is in consideration for 16-team leagues, perhaps 14-team leagues, maybe. I'm not saying to go out and really throw everything to try and acquire him, because he's going to have Dragic in front of him, but he will overtake Chalmers in the next 2 to 3 years as the backup point guard, get that 20 minutes, get 4 assists, get 1.5 threes, get 11 points a game, 10 points a game, and that becomes useful in those deeper sort of formats. But I don't expect him to ever become a starting caliber NBA point guard, really, at any stage throughout his career. Shooting guards. Let's start with Dwayne Wade, who we know the situation with Wade and the injuries. He played 62 games this season. He had migraine issues. He had a hamstring issue. But the 62 games, it's a little bit not misleading, because he did play more than he did the year before. Last year, the year before, he played only 54 games, but there's always going to be this injury risk with him. Now, his numbers improved without LeBron around, up to 21.5 points. Still doesn't hit threes. 3.5 rebounds, 4.8 assists, 1.2 steals. But what's notable is his drop in field goal percentage. The last two seasons, he'd been at 52 and 55. Last year, 47. And that's without LeBron there. And that's an obvious sort of side effect of not having LeBron James around. Total value, he was the 72nd ranked player, but even on per game value, 57th. He's getting older. The injuries aren't going to go away. Now, it wasn't so much a problem with his knee this year, which is encouraging, but you think that, well, everything balancing out, the law of averages, he's going to have some knee problems next season. I don't think taking Dwayne Wade inside the top 50 is really a smart choice in any league from now until the rest of his career. It's going to be hard to put up or to find reasons for him to be a top 50 player. I don't think I'd be drafting him inside the top 80. I think he's only going to get worse and worse. And now with Dragic there, Bosch back to full health, the emergence of Hassan Whiteside, Wade is going to be on his way down. He's not going to be a bad player by any stretch, but he's not going to be a top 50, a top 40 sort of fantasy guy. I don't think anyone will take him there. So I don't think it's going to be in a situation where you leave Wade and someone's going to snag him in the top 50. I don't think that will be the case. I'll just be really weary. Probably top 80. I wouldn't take him inside the top 80 at this point if I was thinking about it. His season wasn't a complete write-off. The scoring is really nice, but not a lot else in the other areas. 4.8 assists from a shooting guard is used. It's very, very good, in fact. Even 47% from the field is good. It's just not at Dwayne Wade 55% level that he'd been doing before that. He just can't rely on him. That's the main point. You can't rely on him to play enough games to be a useful guy for a big stretch of the season. You fear that the knee problem is going to come back this season after being pretty much free of those worries last season, and then you compound it with everything else, with the hamstring problems, with the migraine issues. Like, he did have that small knee issue towards the end of the season, but we're not talking that. We're talking, you know, early on in the year when the season was still alive, not those shutdown injuries. They don't really mean a huge amount. So Dwayne Wade, the signs don't look positive for him, and I don't think that we're ever going to see him back in the top 50. The other shooting guards on this roster, they're really not much chop at all. Tyler Johnson, Henry Walker, and Zoran Dragic. Now, Walker had stretches of being a useful guy. This is Henry Walker, the artist formerly known as Bill Walker, who had some seasons playing for the Knicks. He signed midway. This team is filled with D-League signees. Henry Walker, one of them. He played 26 minutes a game in his 24 games. He started quite a few games, but apart from his 1.9 threes a game, there's not a lot to really like there. You can like his one steal a game, but 7.3 points, 3.5 rebounds, one assist, half a block, 35% shooting. Not a great sort of stat line to look at. But deeper leagues could have used him. 170th per game, 178 after the All-Star break. That's sort of when he signed around that time. And he was useful. Even 12-team leagues could have used him in stretches, but to rely on him consistently was an exercise in folly, because he'd have one good game, then two or three bad games, and one good game. And it just, the overall sum of what he was giving you was not enough to stick him in the lineup consistently. Same goes for Tyler Johnson. He'd go out there and put up one big game, and then he'd go missing, and he'd not play, and he'd do basically nothing. Now, he played 32 games. He played 19 minutes a game, half a three, 6 points, 2.5 rebounds, one steal. Just nothing exciting from Tyler Johnson. Now, these guys, as I said before, these guys are signed on for another season. The Heat signed them to two-year deals. So they are going to be on the roster again. Deep leagues will want to look at using them, because the Heat don't have a real genuine backup. And as I said, there's not much flexibility in this team to sign someone. So it's going to be Henry Walker. It's going to be Tyler Johnson, who is the backup shooting guard behind Dwayne Wade. One of those guys is going to get 20 minutes a game, or they're going to get 15 each, or whatever it is. But we'd have to be talking pretty deep leagues. Walker's contribution was better than Johnson's, because he was able to hit those two threes a game. But we're talking 16 to 18 team leagues only. Johnson deeper than that, and I don't ever see them developing into players who are going to have you. They're not going to be players to try and acquire in deep leagues, although the opportunity will be there for one of them, or maybe both. One of them will have somewhat of an opportunity to have some stretches of decent play next season with the inevitable Wade injury. Now, Zoran Dragic, who came over in the Goran Dragic trade, not really much to write home about with him. He's the 463rd ranked player. That's obviously not ideal, and I don't think he's got much of an NBA career. Someone who I don't think has got much of an NBA career left is Luol Deng, who continues to disappoint pretty much every season, well, the last couple anyway. He played 72 games, so he's relatively healthy. 34 minutes, which is good. 14 points, a 3, 5 rebounds, 0.9 steals, 2 assists, 47 and 76 as his percentages. So they're okay numbers. He's a very good roto player, the 59th ranked roto player overall. But head-to-head per game, 128th, and got worse at the end of the season. 168th post-All-Star break when Goran Dragic arrived. He became like a lower option on the totem pole. I don't think there's much point in taking Luol Deng inside the top 100, even for roto leagues, even though he finished that high at 59, I don't think there's much point taking him inside the top 100 because not many players are going to be looking to take him there. And if they have that full complement of guys, if McRoberts is back, Bosch is there, Whiteside's there, Dragic is there, Wade is there, the numbers are going to be diluted across a number of guys. And Deng just isn't that aggressive. He's quite passive. He's not going to be looking to force things. He put up big numbers in games when, say, Bosch was out, or when Wade was out, when he was one of the two guys, and then he was able to put up decent numbers. When he was the third option or even the fourth option, you got nothing out of him. And that is the way it's projecting for next season. So I think Luol Deng's on a big downswing. I'd be trying to trade him away if I can get any sort of value from him in Dynasty Leagues. I said he's got 1 year left as a player option. I reckon he takes that as a $10 million deal because I couldn't see him signing a contract where he's getting $10 million a year based on his play the last two seasons. It has not been very good at all. James Ennis is someone who I think is really intriguing. He's a rookie last year. He was drafted the year before, played in Australia. The numbers on the surface aren't that impressive. 332nd ranked per game. But I like the way he plays. He played 62 games, 17 minutes a game, 5 points, 2.8 rebounds, half a 3, half a steal, 41% and 84%. But I like what he did down this stretch. He was 205th in the last month of the season. Got a little bit more playing time with Wade sitting out some games, with Bosch out, and started to look a bit better. Those last 2 weeks of the season, 9 points, a 3, 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists, getting a bit better. I think there's significant upside for James Ennis moving forward now. Not necessarily upside to become a star, but I don't imagine the Heat looking to re-sign Deng at a big contract, and they could easily slot him in as a starting small forward. I think there's enough talent there. He's someone who I think in dynasty leagues I'd be trying to get on the cheap and seeing if someone doesn't really believe in him. I do believe in him. I think there is something there for him, and he could be either a starter level player, or he could be like a primary wing backup sort of player, a guy who could back up both Wade and Deng and play 20 to 25 minutes a game. He might not see that big rise next season, but I imagine the season after, we're going to see some pretty big numbers for Ennis. So, well, no, let's rephrase. Not pretty big. Pretty big in comparison to what he's doing at the moment. So I think he's someone who is more of a long-term investment, but I like the way that his career is headed. The other guy with small forward eligibility on this roster is Michael Beasley, who is a free agent after this season. He had a real chance to come in and provide some value for this team. Didn't really do it. He did get 21 minutes a game. Almost 9 points, almost 4 rebounds, not much else, but it was decent sort of numbers. 248th in the last month of the season, but look at that in comparison to James Ennis, who was ranked 205th in less minutes. So I think that Beasley's time in the NBA is probably finished. We've heard it before. He's been to China, he's come back. I don't think we'd really need to consider Michael Beasley as being an NBA factor for too much longer. If we move into the front court now, Chris Bosh, the best player on this team, definitely wasn't his best season. His roto numbers were pretty good. He was a lot better as a roto guy. He only played 44 games, but his total head-to-head rank, 171. His total roto rank, 119th. Big difference there, so he's a better roto player. His head-to-head per game value, that's what is disappointing. It was only 68th. 21 points a game, 7 rebounds, 1.5 threes, so really took his three-pointer game up to the next level. But 46% from a power forward, 77 free throw is good. Less than a steal, only half a block a game. That's what the disappointment was. The 21 points is good. The 1.5 threes is really handy from a guy who's a power forward. But his other numbers, they just didn't live up. So we just didn't see him really taking control. We didn't look. His steals and blocks were both at one a game last season, down to 0.9 and 0.5. His field goal percentage dropped by 5%. His free throw percentage dropped by 5%. His scoring and his threes are really the only things that went up. Now back fully healthy with a pretty decent starting lineup. The fact that he doesn't have to play center with Hassan Whiteside there, I think we're going to see a pretty damaging Chris Bosh. We're going to see him, I reckon, back to a 20-point scoring a game like we saw last season. We might not see his rebounds ever jump back up to 10 a game with Whiteside around. I think 6.5 to 7 is probably the limit there. But I reckon we should see his blocks come up as he comes across for more weak side help. He'll be able to do some more stealing, playing on the perimeter a little bit more. And we just got to hope that field goal percentage rises. Is he going to be a top 20 player? Probably not. But is he going to be the 68th best player? I think there's no chance of that. He's got to be higher than that. I'd be happy taking him in the 40s. I think that's probably a good spot for him. A little bit higher for roto leagues. I don't think this injury or this blood clot that he had is really going to have any impact on him moving forward. I don't think that's really any sort of concern there. So he is someone that I'd be very happy taking in dynasty formats, because I think that the future for him is not really clouded at all. Just got to know what to expect. We know we're going to get scoring, we're going to get threes. Don't expect big rebounds, and hopefully those defensive numbers come back up. Josh McRoberts was obviously a disappointment with that toe, the toe issue that he had, and then the knee problem that forced him out for the season. He only played 17 games, and even when he played, only 17 minutes. 4 points, 2 assists, 2.5 rebounds, 0.7 steals, 53% shooting. But what is good that he had 2 assists in 17 minutes. He's a big man who can get you 4 to 4.5 assists a game. He can get you a 3 a game, 10 or 11 points, 5 or 6 rebounds, decent shooting numbers. Now, he's probably going to find it hard to get big minutes with Bosch and Whiteside there, but he'll be the primary backup, you'd think, behind Bosch. It might give him only 20 minutes a game. So while he was looking to be a real standard league contributor this year, the 244th rank per game is, he'll be higher than that, but I don't think he's going to be into the top 150. I think we're looking at Josh McRoberts as being a guy that's outside of 10 and 12 team leagues, possibly even outside of 14 team leagues, maybe a 16 team league guy because of who's in front of him, which is disappointing because he had a big chance to really stamp himself as a real fantasy force playing next to Chris Bosh. The emergence of Whiteside, though, probably limits that to a fairly decent degree. Before we get on to Whiteside, let's talk Udonis Haslem, the other power forward on this roster. He played 62 games at 16 minutes a pop, 4 points, 4 rebounds a game, and that's really where his value is. It's just 10 points, 10 rebounds if he plays a full game. Double-doubles can help in a double-double-like league, but otherwise, Udonis Haslem looks completely washed up at this point. The 360th ranked player for the season. When he got more minutes at the end, though, he did pick it up, 214th, but that's probably the peak of what he's going to be able to do. I wouldn't expect too much more from Udonis Haslem. And I said, with these other guys in the mix, Whiteside, Bosch, McRoberts, and with the Heat, I would say looking to pick up another big man with the 10th pick in the draft, I don't think there's long left in Udonis Haslem's career. Now, Hassan Whiteside. One of the surprises of the season, one of the waiver wire pickups of the season, he played just 48 games, but he was an absolute monster. The thing is, he played 48 games, but in head-to-head total value, so total, so not per game, total, he's the 104th ranked player in only 48 games. Per game, 21. The post-All-Star break, 15, and the last month, 11th. On a per 36-minute basis, the 12th best player. These are some crazy numbers. His roto ranking, 178th. It is hard to use him in roto because of his deficiency in his free throw shooting. But the numbers he was able to put up, we look at what he did, say, the last month of the season. 14.4 points, 10.5 rebounds, 3.1 blocks, 63% from the field goal percentage. So, great rebounds, awesome blocks, awesome field goal percentage, solid points. Now, you get no threes, you get no assists. He averaged 0.1 assists a game. That is brutal. 0.8 steals, okay for a big man. The problem with him is, does it continue? That's that. Now, I think that he'll be good next season. I just don't think that he's going to be good for the next 4 to 5 seasons. I think that's my worry with him. He's had a lot of mental issues. We saw his mental fragility at times during the season. We saw that ridiculous cheap shot he put on Kelly Olynyk with Tito Santana flying forearm to the back of his head. Just some complete brain farts from him at times. And that's what kept him out of the NBA for years and years at a time when he was considered a lottery pick coming into his draft season and slipped to the second round and then was playing over in Europe and over in Lebanon. Not really necessarily basketball hotspots. He just really, really struggled. Got an opportunity here and ran with it with both hands, and that's fantastic. Big credit to him. I wouldn't be paying for him as a top 20 guy for Dynasty Leagues for the next 4 to 5 seasons. But next season, you're not going to get him outside the top 30. He's going to be in that Rudy Gobert, Nerlens Noel range in between 20 and 30. And that's fine. You're building a team based on punting free throws, points, rebounds, blocks, and field goal percentage. He gives you a huge, huge bump in all of those categories. So it's going to be really interesting to see what he does with a full offseason, with a full season playing there in Miami. The board numbers are going to be big. The rebound numbers are going to be big. He's not going to do anything except for dunk it and do putbacks, so we don't need to worry about his field goal percentage too much. But the numbers for him are going to be... He's going to be one of the more intriguing players to watch, but I still maintain 2-3 years down the track, not sure he's going to be putting up these numbers. I feel maybe a Larry Sanders type fade out, not necessarily because of the same reasons, but we saw Larry Sanders have that one big season, and then aside from the mental illness that he suffered, just he wasn't able to be as effective, and I fear that Whiteside will be in that same sort of category. Still expecting a big year from him next year. I just don't know how long it's going to last after that. The other center the Heat had on the roster was the Birdman, Chris Anderson, and he's always a really useful fantasy player for what he gives you. Post All-Star break, the 186th ranked player. Per game for the season, 194. So deep leagues could have used him for a big chunk of the season. 19 minutes a game, 1 block, 5 rebounds, 58% shooting. That's why you use him. He was a great streaming option, especially when Whiteside was out with that lacerated hand. You could put Anderson in, get 1 to 2 blocks a game, get 5 or 6 rebounds a game, get really nothing else. But that's okay in head-to-head leagues. When you're just looking to chime in at the end of a matchup, you know, throw in some rebounds, throw in some blocks, Anderson was a solid option. Now, as I said, I imagine the Heat are going to be looking big with pick 10, and that might limit Anderson's usefulness moving forward. But he's always a decent option to get you those rebounds and blocks on a semi-permanent, sort of as-needed basis, not necessarily an all-the-time sort of contributor. That does it for today's podcast, guys, on the Miami Heat. Don't forget, if you're interested in the Red Rock Dynasty League, check out the video on YouTube with the application information. I'm still working on the details of the league, but as I said, it's going to have salaries, player salaries based on the draft, a salary cap. It's going to have contract length that you have to decide for your players. It's going to be a full dynasty, obviously, so a deep league with myself, Mark, and Matt in the league as well. Follow me on all the social media accounts. Follow, like, subscribe the podcast, leave a review. All that stuff is very, very helpful in getting the podcast notice. And don't forget to click on sponsors links on the webpage. That helps a lot also. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.